Visiting today with Dr. Darren Hudson. He's a professor of agriculture and applied economics at Texas Tech. And we've invited him on the show today because, man, I tell you what, the world's just kind of in a mess right now, watching all these events unfold with Russia and Ukraine and $10 wheat. So kind of give us an overview.
Well, you know, I think that can take all day, depending on what direction we wandered down.
Absolutely.
But, you know, it's obviously the war itself is, you know, problematic from a lot of reasons, humanitarian, otherwise. But, you know, we look at markets, obviously, you know, Ukraine is a large exporter of wheat, corn, vegetable oil, barley, you know, but also fertilizer. You know, that's a big one in there. You know, you have to be, even as an optimist, and look and say, okay, this war is over today. You know, we're in planting season right now, especially for corn in that part of the world. So it's, you know, the supply disruptions are pretty substantial. You know, the corn exports from Ukraine are about 14% of global trade. And so, you know, that kind of supply disruption is just wreaking havoc on markets, and wheat being, you know, obviously one of them, a big one. But on the flip side, you know, it always people forget that we've got sanctions on Russia. And Russia is also a big, you know, wheat exporter and fertilizer exporter. So the sort of the dynamics that are taking place here are sort of shocking the markets. They're trying to find, you know, what's a realistic level, and in a very fluid market, the information flow here is, you know, ebbing and flowing, and traders are reacting to just about anything that looks like it might change expectations about, you know, wheat supply or cost of production or anything. And, you know, so all these things are layered together, and we all, you know, everybody kind of forgets we're on a pretty substantial run in terms of inflation before Ukraine.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, so when we talk about $700 or $800 urea, nitrogen fertilizer, we were at $600 before the invasion. So, this is not by any stretch of the imagination all related to that, but it is certainly exacerbating it. And I think, you know, markets have to play out. They have to figure out how to ration sort of available supplies around the world. And, you know, we layer onto that sort of the weather uncertainty, you know, the there's no moisture on the Great Plains. So what's our wheat crop going to look like? And,
right. You
know, so all those things are playing off each other, creating a lot of uncertainty and a lot of volatility in markets. And I think that's the key. I don't know that, you know, we'll end up at $10 wheat, but, you know, we may go $12, $13 before we, you know, we go the other direction, depending on what weather does out here. You know, I think the other side of that is we look at this, and one of the things people look at and say, well, these, you know, these high prices, you know, $10 wheat's not good for anybody. $180 barrel oil is not good for anybody. You know,
right.
$1.50 cotton is not good for anybody. It's a short run thing, but all that happens is what we've already seen is it bids up all the input prices. So the profit margins aren't that much greater at the end of the day anyway. And you get a lot of demand destruction, you know, things, people start looking for substitutes and other things that they can do. So yeah, it's a real mess, as you indicated.
Well, so how long do you think, in your opinion, does this particular thing continue to affect prices? Like if it ends today or ends this week, how long are we going to continue to see like a trickle down effect of this?
Well, it will be a while. I mean, obviously if all commodity markets turned around, went the other direction, you know, sort of long-term effects on food prices are probably, you know, minimal. But any sustained period with this high of food prices, or this high of input prices in the food supply chain is going to play out over the next, you know, at least the next 6 to 8 months. And it's going to impact, you know, consumers' budgets. You know, we look at a lot of different products, you know, across the board, and not all of them are affected in the same way. So then people's consumption patterns change, and, you know, you start, you know, getting sort of habit formation of, we saw this during COVID, you know, the way that people bought stuff, and it's certainly altered the way, say, you know, grocery delivery. Who would have thought about grocery delivery before COVID? It wasn't really that popular of a thing. And now it, you know, it's extremely popular, and people have sort of latched onto that, that purchasing habit. So I think there's a lot of things, but the immediate impact, of course, is when you have this big of an increase in prices at the gas pump, it's going to affect everything else, both on the input side, you know, for producers, but also on the consumption side, because people have less disposable income after paying for fuel price increases.
Well, in these kind of black swan type events, what is some advice on what producers should be doing? I mean, obviously you can't prepare for them, but what can you do like during the interim?
Well, you know, I think a lot of this is producers sometimes like to gamble in, you know, I'm not going to book diesel, or I'm not going to forward contract, or I'm not going to use futures or things like that. And those events exist for these very sort of moments, or those tools exist for these very moments. And, you know, having some protection there, I think is pretty good. I think in the short run here, what we're going to see is a lot of rationalization of how people use inputs, and, you know, fertilizer price is going up. We're going to figure out how we can use a lot less of it. We've got, you know, potential serious problems in terms of lack of delivery of inputs like Roundup and, you know, other things that are going to be in short supply. And so producers are going to have to rethink about the way they're approaching that, and how are they going to control weeds in a world where herbicide isn't as readily available or is very expensive for what is available. And I think the other thing is, when producers, you know, when we get through this or in this process, I hope what producers really start thinking about is financial risk, not just price risk, but, you know, maintaining cash reserves, doing things that are strategies at minimizing household risk out into the future, so that when you have this event, you know, you've got something to fall back on in terms of maintaining your household or your production process without having to, you go back to the bank or, dramatically alter the way you think about producing goods. But I hope one of the things is, producers really start looking at the marketing side of things more seriously than they probably have been.
You know, we talked a little bit about COVID, and I think some producers and people thought, well, you know, once COVID's over, everything will kind of go back to normal. And now we're finding that there's kind of a new normal. So with that being said, but with Russia and Ukraine, what do you see as being some long-term lasting effects that we may not be able to bounce back from?
Well, I laughed. I heard a joke the other day that said, history repeats itself. I just didn't think it would do it in a 2-year period, entire century's exactly. Worth of history in a 2-year period. I think, one of the challenges, I think, going forward is one, you know, of course, there's always this talk about buy American, make it in America, all that sort of stuff. We already face really high labor costs and labor shortages. The realism of thinking that we're going to produce all this stuff in the U.S. is a pipe dream. But that doesn't mean that we can't realign supply chains in areas that are have less political risk for us. China. We need to rationalize and rethink about the way that we organize our supply chains quite a bit. And I think that's going to be one of the lasting things. I think COVID was already pushing more businesses away from China into other areas of the world that were less politically likely to, undermine their business or their supply chains, diversify that risk a little bit around the globe, which, you know, raises costs, but it also reduces risk. So that's part of it. I think the ag supply chain is really, in part, the U.S. agriculture is a little more buffered against this simply because we have a greater diversity of where we send product. So I think, we're not dependent on Russia as the primary consumer, but we are dependent on China. as a primary consumer for U.S. ag products, and we probably ought to rethink that as being overly dependent on one country or set of countries that are probably not strategically aligned with the U.S. So I think that's one is rethinking those supply chains. The other one I think that we've coming out of COVID is consumers are changing pretty substantially. And this does a couple of things. One is that it offers sort of opportunities, I think, like in beef processing, for example. There's a pretty substantial, there was a pretty substantial shift or demand for movement to smaller processors. So I think there are some opportunities for entrepreneurs in ag to really make headways because that consumer dynamic has changed so much that that there are some there's some chances to secure more localized markets with that are less less prone to those kind of risks, market risks out there overall. But at the same time, we did a big survey of U.S. consumers for another project here during COVID, and one of the things that we asked were, did you change your consumption to more at home consumption than away from home? And of course, most people did either by choice or by mandate. But the follow-up question is, do you intend to maintain this at this level of at home consumption after COVID? And 78% of them said no. And so I think, we shouldn't make too much of what those structural changes are likely to be, but certainly it's going to change the way consumers view markets, which is both an opportunity and a challenge for U.S. ag.
Well, kind of staying with that, what do situations like this do for trade relations looking forward?
Well, they're a challenge. I mean, I think realistically, we haven't done this yet, but if this war gets protracted in Ukraine and China continues to support Russia in that effort, I don't think there's a realistic expectation that we're going to be able to maintain the kind of trade relations with China we've had in the past. So again, I think it behooves U.S. industry to really start looking to diversify customers and suppliers, for inputs or other products. Because I don't know that we're going to be in the same kind of world after this is over, even if it manages to end fairly quickly. I think the views of a lot of places, a lot of the U.S. consumers, but also a lot of U.S. businesses, is China's not likely to be as reliable a partner in trade going forward as they were in the past. And it makes them much more susceptible to whatever you want to call it, the sort of cancellation culture or whatever. We saw some of that over the Uyghur Muslim issue, but certainly not to the extent that we've seen in Ukraine. But that doesn't mean that people aren't going to turn their attention around once Ukraine is over and start looking for the next issue to go after from a commercial sense. So I think there's some vulnerability in those trade relations, and we probably need to be rethinking it. I've been famous for, not overly political, but I was very critical of the Trump administration's withdrawal from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, not because it was necessarily all that valuable to the U.S. in a commercial sense, but what the Trans-Pacific Partnership did was essentially isolate China in the Asian region and made it strategically more possible for us to be able to isolate China should we need to in an event such as this. Right now, we're just, we're kind of, China's an equal player in this, and we have a lot less leverage there. But trade relations are going to change, there's no doubt. And I don't know how, it's hard to forecast where those are going to end up. But certainly, I think Russia has alienated itself. India is getting very close to, it's questioning its alignment with Russia, but up till now, the U.S. hasn't been, very, I guess you would say, warm to Indian trade relations. But China's sort of always the elephant in the room, and we've got to figure out what we're going to do with that going forward.
A lot of big questions to be answered. Dr. Hudson, we appreciate you joining us today.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.